This is the Oanda Podcast.
Welcome to the Oanda Market Insights Podcast, speaking to Oanda senior market analysts from around the world with all the latest business and market news. And today I'm delighted to say it's hello to Ed Moyer in New York. Good afternoon, or almost good evening from London. How are you doing?
Wonderful, Johnny. Thank you for having me once again.
Now, we've got some really interesting topics to discuss, but let's start with those surprising US inflation numbers earlier in the week. Consumer prices jumping 4.2%. That was up from 2.6% in March, and that is the biggest increase since September 2008. And that, of course, stoked fears that rising consumer prices could push up interest rates. And some analysts said that the figures could be rising because of other temporary factors like supply bottlenecks. But this inflation number certainly spooked markets right across the world, really, didn't it?
Very much so. And I think, you know, if you had to sum it up in one sentence, inflation is back. And I think a lot of people, though, they're not really worried, at least not yet. They're attributing these price increases to the semiconductor shortage that, you know, we've been talking about for months, and also to the super commodity cycle. And right after the inflation readings, we heard the PPI, the producer prices index, and that was also hotter than expected. So it seems that, okay, we're going to see probably producers pass that on to the consumer next month. So there's just this steady stream of pricing pressures that it seems that this economy is bracing for. And I think what you're probably going to have is a market that is going to continue to look at the Fed and say, are you sure this is going to be transitory? Because the Fed has not, you know, budged in any way and thinking that these pricing pressures will not be transitory. And guess what? We're going to have to wait, you know, many reports until an assessment can really be made. And I think the thing that everyone is wondering is, you know, okay, well, when we get towards the end of the summer, are these pricing pressures still going to be, coming in much hotter than, you know, these consensus estimates? And if they are, you know, then that will probably change the Fed's bias. But for right now, you know, this is the first round of pricing reports that they're coming in hot, and a lot of people were expecting that. So I think you're having the initial reaction. You know, we did see Treasury yields, you know, surge off of that, but it was interesting that after the PPI report, they did not. They actually started to come down, and I think a lot of that is being attributed to that belief. You know, whether the Fed is right or wrong, the Fed is committed to this ultra accommodative stance, and that's why I think we have Treasury yields capped. So this is going to be very interesting, I think, over these next few months to see how hot these numbers get. But for right now, it does look like this little inflation report, did trigger a little bit of a panic in the market. We saw the S&P 500 down 5% from its record highs, and the NASDAQ was down over, I think, around 8%. And I think it was very interesting to point out, though, that once it hit that 5% level in the S&P 500, the algos bought that up. I think that you have to, you know, remind yourself that, you know, given where the U.S. economy is, where at this point in the cycle, you know, you would expect investors to be concerned that we're not going to have enough growth and that the Fed might start to slow down its accommodative stance. That's not what we're having. Right now, we have, you know, the prospects of a lot more growth, and the market is, afraid that the Fed might not, you know, slow down this accommodation. So it's an inverse situation here. And I think that's why you're going to see a lot of this institutional money is going to want to buy any dip we get. And I think the outlook is still pretty pretty optimistic for stocks. I think it's going to be a very choppy couple of months because we're going to be overreacting to these economic releases, specifically these pricing reports and also the labor market figures that we'll get. And in the end, though, I think there's still too much money available in the system, and that's going to drive economic activity, and we don't have tightening conditions, so U.S. stocks still looking pretty attractive here, but I think you're probably going to see a lot more calls for caution over these next couple of months, and but in the end, taper tantrum worries they'll eventually surface, but I think right now people just don't want to abandon the U.S. stock market just yet.
And you used the word there, Ed. Overreaction. And we saw that perhaps last week, same time last week when we were talking about those job figures, the non-farm payroll, which were, way below expectations. And we've seen this again this week with the inflation. So it could be that, both are examples of outliers where, markets to a certain extent take advantage of the situation, take advantage of that dip, the algos, as you call it. And, somebody's going to make a lot of money out of that, where in fact, medium to long term, they don't really give us that much clue as to what really is going to happen.
Exactly. And I think right now you're in a difficult market right now to navigate, because I think you have a growing group of investors that believe, the Fed is making a policy mistake right now. There's an easy argument that can be made that, the Fed should be tapering their asset purchases. They should be following the lead from the Bank of Canada, Bank of England. It's like right now, if we were, giving grades, it seems, Bank of Canada is getting an A, and so is the Bank of England. And right now, the U.S., despite a tremendous growth outlook and, reopening momentum, You're made possibly slow to the curve here as far as tapering some of these purchases. I mean, right now, $120 billion a month. I think the question was asked to Fed Chair Powell at the last FOMC press conference was, why can't we just do it at $100 billion? What would be the difference into the economy? And the Fed obviously dodged that question, but I think that you're going to see that. I think Wall Street is really going to embrace the Bank of Canada and Bank of England for their sound, what appears right now at this point as a sound policy decision to start removing some of that accommodation. You want to save it for when you really need it. And I think if you're one of the biggest concerns, I think that people are going to eventually focus on is that we're talking about base effects right now. But remember, in 2022, when we're talking about, okay, wow, look at this. We had this big price surge early in 2021. Well, in 2022, that's really going to depress some of those pricing levels. And if let's say the economy has, hit a road bump, we could be in gridlock on Congress because we're approaching those midterms, and there could be some concern that, there was just, the overheating of the economy and the taper tantrum really is starting to have its impact. The Fed is going to have less ammunition than where they should have been. So I think the debate is going to continue. And right now, I think the trade seems to be, U.S. stocks still look pretty attractive, but I think a lot of people are starting to, bet against that dollar. And you're probably going to see Bank of the Canadian dollar and some of these European currencies really start to shine.
In fact, while we've been talking, Ed, we've had the latest from the ECB, the European Central Bank. Their policymakers have said that growth and inflation in the Eurozone are more likely to overshoot expectation. That's setting up that debate over whether the brightening outlook means it should slow the pace of its bond buying. So this is getting quite contagious, isn't it?
Yeah, very much so. And I think, the money markets right now, they see the ECB raising rates in 2025. So I think,
wow,
I think inflation, it's going to be higher. That's a given. I think that the aggressive fiscal policy is going to help keep driving this high pressure economy. But in the end, the ECB has a much harder job because of just there's just so many countries with different situations, and I think that's why you have a much more difficult time in tightening policy there.
When you say you, of course, it's no longer me. Oh. We're no longer involved with those people, remember? Just joking. The other big story of the week, which I know you love to talk about, is around cryptocurrency. And we had two. Earlier on, we had Bitcoin plunging, I think it was as much as 17%, after just one tweet from Elon Musk, who said that Tesla had stopped accepting Bitcoin to purchase its vehicles because of climate concerns. And then we saw Bitcoin fall from around about $55,000 to just under $46,000. That was its lowest since March the 1st, in just under 2 hours. And that's just because of the tweet. And that's amazing how powerful Mr. Musk has become. And that, of course, followed something similar at the weekend when he put the mockers on Dogecoin because of a few jokes on Saturday Night Live, which we mentioned, didn't we, last weekend. So just shows you how powerful one person can be these days. Just a few choice comments, a few characters here and there, and then plunging prices.
I feel that when President Trump was active, at the time when he was President Trump and very busy on Twitter, he would move markets. And I thought we would not see anyone be close to that. Well, Elon Musk has definitely provided us with significant swings across the cryptocurrency space. And I think that, the Saturday Night Live appearance really was kind of eye-opening, because I think there was one thing some crypto investors were hoping for. And they were hoping that Elon Musk was going to inspire a new wave of people interested into dabbling with Dogecoin or Bitcoin. And the Weekend Tonight skit, where at the very end they kind of acknowledged that, oh, it's a hustle, that really kind of cemented the view that, okay, this is not going to have any success in really attracting new investors. And then I think what we also saw was that this week there's been a big focus on the impact on Bitcoin mining. And two weeks ago we had Bill Maher on his weekend show, where he called out Elon Musk complaining about how irresponsible it is for Tesla to be backing Bitcoin because of this, of its environmental impact on with all the mining and coal use and the lack of focus with renewables, and then a week ago we had the New York State Senate announce that they were considering some legislation to look into greenhouse gas emissions caused by Bitcoin mining. And they're contemplating proposing a 3-year halting of Bitcoin mining. So it there was this, and everyone knew about the carbon footprint problem that Bitcoin has. So this is nothing that was it was not a new revelation, but I think what we saw then was Elon Musk, when he announced that Tesla was going to stop accepting Bitcoin as a payment because of his clean energy concerns, it was really, I think, a decision for him to get ahead of the news cycle. I think it was pretty timely. I think that the announcement that they're going to focus on new or much more energy friendly cryptocurrencies is going to really, I think, force the entire cryptoverse to really abandon you know, the use of coal for energy. And I think the demand for renewables right now, I think it's less than a third are really being used for providing the electricity that is needed for these cryptocurrencies. So there's this, I think, big pivot here where Bitcoin is not going to go away. I don't think you can say that the ESG movement is going to lead to many traders to just completely abandoning this trade. No, but I think you're going to see the pressure is going to be there to address this environmental impact. And I think you're going to see some of these other coins, and one that has really gained some momentum is Chia, because they kind of operate a little bit differently. You know, Bitcoin, they use mining and they have to have rigs and use computer processors that use a lot of energy. And with Chia, you know, they don't use, you know, high volumes of electricity. They're really a lot of what's done with them is more of an impact on the hardware side of things. And while, you know, the excessive overworking of these hard drives is making them have a shorter lifespan, and that's a, you know, negative impact on the environment, you're going to see that the entire cryptoverse is looking to find ways to address this, and it's probably going to be months until this is really something is, you know, identified. And I think what's really fascinating is that, you know, you then, you know, even just yesterday we have Elon Musk tweeting that he's working with Dogecoin developers. So I think we're in a position where no one knows where this environmental movement is going in these cryptocurrencies. But I think you're going to see that the trade right now seems that you're going to see some of these altcoins that consume less energy are going to probably appreciate. Bitcoin is going to be in a tough environment here, I think, until they really start to until they can show that, you know, they've made some progress on the carbon footprint. You're going to see it's going to be difficult for any corporation to embrace, putting Bitcoin on their balance sheet. Since Tesla, you know, flip-flopped on accepting it as a form of payment, it seems very unlikely you're going to see anyone really want to embrace that decision, or to be willing to take on Bitcoin as payment. So it's going to be, I think, a tough period here for some of these the larger cryptocurrencies, and I think the volatility is completely not going to ease up anytime soon. We've had the world's largest crypto exchange, Binance, just they're getting investigated, and you know, they've not been accused of anything, but it just seems that there's no shortfall of cryptocurrency headlines, and right now this space is extremely volatile, and it's probably going to remain that way for a while.
Very interesting stuff. One other story I wanted to ask you about, Ed, the Colonial Pipeline, which has reportedly paid a cyber criminal gang nearly $5 million in ransom following a cyber attack. Of course, it suffered a ransomware attack over the weekend and took its service down for 5 days. And that did cause supplies to tighten across the US. So there was a real effect through that cyber attack. Where are we now with that?
Well, it looks like that, they paid the hackers, and I think that there's a belief that it's going to take about 2 weeks to get everything in order. It seems that as far as an impact on oil prices, there was that initial reaction. Gasoline prices, obviously, I think it was about a quarter higher off of this story. But it seems that this has is likely to not have a lasting impact. But the concerns of hacking are not going to go away anytime soon. But I think you're going to probably see that this really shows how vulnerable you know, the infrastructure is in America. And I think that you're going to probably see that the Biden administration is going to try to take advantage of improving lots of key parts and vulnerabilities in this country. And I think that you're going to see this. This story is, it seems that everything is heading in the right direction. Yesterday they restarted, but I think that, you know, that there's going to be closer scrutiny as far as how to thwart off some of these future attacks.
Okay, let's look ahead to next week now and what we should look out for. What stands out for you? What are the highlights?
Well, for me, and I think next week there is a lot of economic data. There's a lot of central bank speakers. For the main event, I think there's going to be, you could wrap it around two key things. I think the FOMC minutes are going to be closely watched. You know, these are dated. The minutes are before the disappointing jobs number, and also these two hot CPI and PPI readings. But I think you're going to see people are going to closely watch to see if there's any clarification on how the Fed, on what the Fed feels is transitory for inflation. As far as how optimistic they were on the economic outlook to get a better baseline on where, you know, the Fed currently stand, or where the Fed stood at the last policy decision. The other key focal point for me is going to be a wrath of Chinese activity data. I think you're going to see there's a strong likelihood you're going to see that the recovery extended into the second quarter. We're going to have production, investment, and retail sales data, and I think, you know, China is strong. I think right now, you know, they've been impacted by a lot of you know, these surging commodity prices. I think it even you know, the iron ore price move was something that really got out of hand, that even Premier Li had to step in, and you know, after Premier Li voiced his concern, and you know, we've seen iron ore come well off those record highs. So I think a big focal point is going to be on that Chinese data, and as far as I think the rest of the world key readings, we're going to have a big surge in UK CPI. That's going to be on everyone's mind. Also, Canada is going to have their inflation figures as well. I think, you know, in the U.S., we also have the first regional survey, the Empire Manufacturing Report. And that one is going to show that the recovery is it's cooling, but it's still strong. I think, you know, lastly, the flash PMI readings, those are always important. That's really going to give us a good handle, I think, on where we stand as far as manufacturing in the U.S.
Okay, very interesting stuff today. Thank you very much, Ed. It's been fascinating, and we look forward to speaking to you same time next week.
Thanks, Johnny. Talk to you then.
The Oanda Podcast.